Good afternoon. Welcome to the Fathers Families Healthy Communities Forum, presented by Fathers Families Healthy Communities. That's FFHC for short. I'm Saquon Lawrence, Director of Fathers Family Healthy Communities Demonstration Project and co-moderator.
And I'm Kirk Harris, Senior Advisor for Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities, and co-moderator with my brother Saquon Lawrence, my brother from another mother.
FFFC is a demonstration project committed to engaging African-American non-custodial fathers to their children financially, socially, and emotionally so that African-American children will realize better outcomes and possibilities. For the next 9 weeks, we will present FFFC's social marketing campaign called the New Man Project, which is an exploration and promotion of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family. We want to reimagine the role and image of black men and fathers and work towards a successful campaign for black male achievement. In addition, we'll lift up examples of affirmative black fatherhood, male-female relationships, and effective parenting. Among the topics we'll cover, the responsible fatherhood field and definitions of manhood, rites of passage and mentoring programs for black youth, effective black leadership in the role of fathers, black womenists who are allies of Fathers Family Healthy Communities, like Women in Fatherhood. We'll be exploring effective approaches to addressing health disparities between the black community and the larger society, examples of strong black families. We'll be examining fathers' role in educating the black child in the 21st century. We'll be looking at effective community-based organizations in the black community, both locally and nationally. In addition, we'll be checking and challenging the media's image of black men and fathers. We'll be taking a look at how to manage legal and personal responsibilities related to financial support of children. And lastly, we'll be exploring effective workforce development and sector-driven job training activity in Chicago. So as you can tell, FFHC's New Man Project is interested in what's good about the black family and community. So let's talk about fathers as assets. Let's examine our youth as a group with enormous capacity and possibility. Let's lift up the black woman as heroic placemakers in our society and community. Let's reintroduce ourselves to our culture and have a dialogue about its central role in our rescue and reassertion in the society and world. So what this means is that Fathers Family Healthy Communities is challenging ourselves and community to dispense with debilitating talk which overemphasizes how bad our communities are, our fathers are, our politicians and leaders, how bad our schools and families are, and instead promote solutions and promote examples of excellence and the best of what it means to be African-American and human in the world. And before I go any further, I want to thank our funders, our primary funders, the Chicago Community Trust and the Open Society Foundation. Today, we're glad to have one of the fathers of FFHC join us on the forum. John Wims is a member of FFHC. And for our listening audience, the fathers in FFHC are not clients, participants, or customers. They are members. And so our members can avail themselves of 5 activities. Just very quickly, legal services to assist with visitation, paternity, and custody issues, as well as expungement of certain categories of criminal records, child support services. Fathers Family Healthy Communities has a strong and cooperative relationship with the Illinois Department of Child Support Services. 3, demand-side job training and job placement services, fathers-only peer-to-peer sessions, and 5, subsidized father-child outings. So, John, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Actually excited.
Welcome.
But thank you. Thank you.
So how did you find out about FFFC?
Well, I got involved with a program called the Safer Foundation, and the Safer Foundation introduced me to a number of people, one of them being members of FFHC. Mm-hmm. And once I got a chance to talk to them, I found out that they had a lot of things that I always wanted to discuss as a father, mm-hmm. so I got involved with that program through the Safer Foundation.
Great. Tell the listening audience, what is your greatest challenge as a non-custodial father who want to be in the life? And I know you have a daughter.
No, a son.
Son, you got a son, excuse mm-hmm. me. You have a son, and he's 9 years old.
Yes.
Right? And so what is your greatest challenge as a non-custodial father who want to be in the life of your son?
I think trying to maintain a working relationship with the child's other parent, my mm-hmm. son's other parent, and putting aside our differences in order to focus on what's really important, which is our child together. Mm-hmm. I think in the beginning, that was our greatest setback, mm-hmm. you know. And even now, it's gotten better. But I think we still need to be able to sit down and talk. We need to have more open dialogue about what we need to do about our child.
Yeah. John, that leads me to the next question, which is really a good lead-in for some of the issues that many of our fathers face with respect to managing and co-parenting with the other parent mm-hmm. And making sure that works on behalf of the children and to make sure that the parents are cooperating the best they can cooperate with respect to that. Are there any specific strategies that you've identified in your own experience that helps you get there, so to speak?
Absolutely. One of the things I did was got over myself. And I got rid of pride, okay? And I didn't feel the need to challenge my son's other parent due to my pride, you know? That's the first thing mm-hmm. I did, got over myself. Mm-hmm. Once I got over myself, and I gave my child's parent the understanding that you're never gonna get this fight out of me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Once I got past that, she got past it, and we were able to talk a little bit better.
So it sounds like what you were saying is that you decided not to be enemy combatants.
Absolutely.
You made the decision not to be that way on behalf of the children.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got past. You mad at me, I'm mad at you. We got past that. Mm-hmm. And we started, and we kept our conversation on our child together. Once we got that set up, then we started to become more, we started to be able to communicate a little bit better after that.
That's fabulous. Well, let me ask this question. It seems though there are many African-American fathers who are in similar positions such as yourself mm-hmm. and who are trying to move forward to do the best they can for their children, trying to do the best they can for themselves so that they can do the best they can for their children. What do you want people to know about fathers like yourself? And what do you think are some of the important messages you'd like to deliver out there to our listening audience about fathers such as yourself?
Well, what I would want people to understand first and foremost is that this is a very emotional, like I've met many fathers that has run into the same problems that I ran into, and it's a very emotional and touchy subject, mm. and it's so much so that it'll either make or break a person. Mm. Now, I would hate to see a father give up and not be a part of their child's life, and it's something I refuse to do. So what I would want people to understand is if not to judge fathers, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but to understand that it's what people don't realize is that fathers have the burden of taking care of themselves mm-hmm. generally mm-hmm. and taking care of that child at the same time, whereas though and when a lot of men feel like they can't do that, it does. How should I say it? It does affect your sense of being a man. It does affect your pride. And what I notice is that a lot of people do drop out because of that. Mm. You know, and it's something that I hate to see in a lot of black men, but that's generally the case. Mm-hmm.
And what would you say to those fathers that feel like they want to drop out? What would you say to encourage them to keep them to stay the course and continue to work in the way that they need to get where they want to get with respect to their children?
The first thing I would want them to know is once that child is here, how you feel and what you think you want to do should come second. Mm. It's okay to have dreams and aspirations and still pursue those dreams and aspirations, but first and foremost, that child is priority number one. Okay, and they don't want to hear your excuses. They don't want to hear that it was hard or you had problems with the mother. The scariest thing I can think of is watching my child grow up and not have any respect or love for me because of what I didn't do for him when he was growing up. That's the thing that disturbs me most of all.
That's a powerful message. So that is an extremely powerful message. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you say you've made the commitment because you know the alternative is not good.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. I was raised by my stepfather. So when I did meet my real father, I didn't hate him, but I didn't have no particular regard for him either. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, he missed that.
Right.
So I would hate to be that person. I would hate to be that person whose child grows up and tells him that you are nothing. You've never been anything to me. You've never done for me.
Right.
Oh, I would. That is the most terrifying thing I can think of. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a really powerful message, and I want absolutely to thank you for sharing
yeah
that.
Yeah, yeah. So, in Father's Family Healthy Communities, talk a little bit about what it's meant to you to be involved in FFHC.
Well, when I. A lot of the problem that I have is finding people that I can talk about things with, I can share things with. Mm-hmm. When I got involved with this program, what I did was I met a lot of people who were like-minded mm-hmm. and who had the same concerns and the same circumstances that I did. So once we got a chance to sit down and talk, we got a chance to kind of throw around some ideas and scenarios that maybe the other person hadn't maybe taken a look at, or maybe we didn't see it in a way that we should have saw. It just gave you a forum to be able to talk to people who were like-minded.
Mm. Right. Now, for the listening audience, what John is referring to is our peer-to-peer sessions, fathers-only, men-only sessions. We conduct every Monday night, And John is in those. I'm in those with John, even though I'm not a non-custodial father. But as I've argued before, I think it's the most important work that we do. We can easily help a brother access job training and placement. We can help get the child support order modified, right? We can the fathers can access legal services, right, through FFFC.
Mm-hmm.
But that peer-to-peer work.
Right, right. The other services you just mentioned, I haven't even got into those yet.
Mm-hmm.
I love my peer-to-peer meetings, mm-hmm. and I love the fact that I'm able to talk about positive things
mm-hmm.
and work on positive behavior. I mean, mm-hmm. Changes mm-hmm. in my approach to doing things. That's what I really love about the program so
right.
far.
Right. And then we have some father-child outings coming up. We love to see your son. What's your son's name?
Jalen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to see him there. And so we're really excited about you being here this afternoon. I know it's a Sunday, and I know this is the time you spend with your son. We don't want to take you away from that anymore. Before we go on, I just want to say that after the break, we're going to have Bill Laurie, the assistant to the vice president at Chicago Community Trust, and our friend. He's going to join us. Also, I want to give a shout out just very quickly to some of our partners who do the heavy lifting with respect to job placement and training for our members. Felix Family Services, Safer Foundation, the North Lawndale Employment Network, Center for New Horizons, the Chicago Urban League, Metropolitan Family Services, and the James Adams Resource Corporation. So I want to give them a shout out, and then also City Colleges. So when you're ready, John, mm-hmm. you know we're ready for you. So we have lots of all the partners who are ready and willing to help.
And we want to mm-hmm. just thank you, John, for being with us here this afternoon. I think the message that you conveyed has been really powerful. You've been really articulate in your and your ability to convey that message. And I think it's one that I think we're going to resonate with a lot of fathers out there. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for giving me a chance to participate.
Yeah, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes.
In the peer-to-peer.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's right.
I don't miss my meeting.
That's right. All right, brother.
So when we come back from break, we're going to talk to Bill Lowry, assistant to the president at the Chicago Community Trust.
Chicago is 1690 WVON, Sherwin, Chicago.
Welcome back to Science Today. And we already have our next caller. Welcome. Who's this?
Hi, I'm Philip.
Hello, Philip. You sound really young.
Not really. I'm 9.
Oh, wow. You're still in elementary school, right?
Does that matter?
Oh, no, not at all. What's your question?
Well, I know the molecular formula for water is H2O. I also know that hydrocarbon is CH3CH250CH3. Glucose is C6H12O6. The general formula for an alkene is CnH2n+2. But what I can't seem to find is any scientific formula for Bob.
Bob?
My goldfish.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
The views expressed on our programs are not necessarily those of WVON, Midway Broadcasting Corporation, or our participating sponsors.
Welcome back. We are pleased to welcome our second guest to the show this afternoon, Mr. Bill Lowry, Chicago Community Trust Special Assistant to the President. An African-American business executive, Bill Lowry has achieved an iconic status working with movers and shakers of Chicago. He was born in Chicago on February 16, 1935, to Wim and Camille Lowry, who were both postal workers. Bill began his long and distinguished career in Chicago business, becoming a member of the training program at the Inland Steel Company. During his early years at Inland, Bill and two other African-American businessmen founded the Youth Motivation Program. It was also through his work with the Youth Motivation Program that he would be tapped to become the host of Opportunity Line, a weekly employment program that first aired on Chicago television station WBBM in 1967. The name of the show was later changed to Objective Jobs, and it aired for 24 years. In 1994, he became the vice president of Chicago-based MacArthur Foundation, one of the largest foundations in the country. He is the recipient of an Emmy Award and a Peabody Award for his work on the Opportunity Line and has been featured in Who's Who, Black America, and Industry. Bill is married and the father of two children. And he's now the special assistant to the president at the Chicago Community Trust. This is a distinguished career, I got to tell you. Let me say before we get started, Bill has been a mentor to young professionals throughout Chicago and one of the few people I know who has effectively made a mark in a diverse number of fields, business, workforce development, education, media, youth development, and philanthropy. I don't know if I know anybody who's really done all of that.
Impressive. Yeah.
So, Bill, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Saquon. Thank you. I guess if nothing else, after that introduction, a very kind introduction, and thank you. If nothing else, people know that, one, I'm old.
Well, you've got a lot of experience, so, you know, Sometimes you got to acquire that experience, right?
Yeah, well, if you live long enough, maybe you'd be lucky enough to do some of that.
Yeah, yeah. And Bill and I, we've talked about this, and he's got some incredible jokes about this. I won't share. But Bill, you're born in Chicago in 1935. One of the things I like talking to Bill about, because he's a Chicagoan, and people know me, I'm always fascinated by the period in the 60s and 50s in Black Chicago, and in and one of the reasons Kirk and I developed the Father Family Healthy Demonstration, Healthy Community Demonstration, is to address the fact that 70% of the households in the Black community are female-headed or without fathers present. And I know you can remember a time when those numbers were upside down, when 70% or more of Black families were two-parent households. Can you talk about what community life was like earlier in Black Chicago's history as a way to speak to what's possible today?
Yeah, it's very interesting. In fact, Saquon, I was thinking about this, I don't know, just a week or so ago, and looking at life now as I know it and see it, and then life back then as I remember it. Now you have to realize after all these years that it may be a little, but I think I still remember enough of it. And there's been quite a few changes. But one of the things that really strikes me is really what you said about the absence of a nuclear family. I think most of the kids that I was growing up with, they did have maybe two parents, or if they weren't two parents, there was a strong supportive family near them, or extended family. And I look now at a lot of the kids and so on. That's simply not true. And then I ask myself, well, why was that? Well, aside from all the things that I guess Dr. Kirk here can talk to us about much better than I can, the many things that have happened socially and otherwise, the one thing that I really remember that in our communities, in the Black communities then, I remember it as being much more diverse. And people will say, well, what do you mean by diverse? There was much more representative of who we were as a race, because the people living on the same blocks were people who were doctors, lawyers, postal employees, ditch diggers, and there was, we had a wealth within our communities that doesn't exist now. And I think that largely one reason for that was the absence of open occupancy made us live together and caused us to live together. Right. But because of that, we had such a valuable, I call mosaic, within the Black community, that we fed off of one another. And the value structures were a lot different. That doesn't exist now, because as open occupancy happened, and then those who were much more affluent could move on. They then went to other schools. They went to parochial schools. They went to private schools. They moved into other areas.
Right.
And they left, in a sense, a group of Blacks at that point not nearly as enriched as that group had been prior to that. And I think that now is, and the victim, a lot of people are victimized by that, and society's victimized by it, but I think more than anything at all, more than anything else, children are victimized by that.
And as special assistant to Terry Mazzani in the Chicago Community Trust, you have a unique perspective, Bill, on the Trust's work in lifting up what works in rebuilding families throughout the city of Chicago, not just in the Black community. Can you share with us what the Trust is up to these days?
I think I can. I can try anyway. But as you know, I'm not in the programming end. Yeah, I'm just somebody that's got big ears and probably a big mouth. But I think it's a marvelous situation, I think, to have a community foundation in the city that is largely, I think, committed to addressing the concerns that we have as a community. And that means all of them to the extent that it can. And that means education, that means health, that means community development, that means the arts and cultures, and all of those things that are important to residents within a community. Community. And that's what the name implies. It's a community foundation. So the investments that we make pretty large investments. In fact, over $100 million each year into the various areas that would include education, health, all of those I mentioned, community development, arts and culture. Also meeting the unmet needs that exist, and believe me, there are many. It's even more important now, Saquon, since with the pretty much a bankrupt state, pretty much a bankrupt city. a lot of the areas and agencies that used to feed and help feed some of these organizations so that they could discharge those activities and programs for the people who needed them most. They can't do that anymore, and they certainly can't do it to the same extent that they did. So trying to fill that void are places like the Trust and MacArthur and most of the other foundations around to the best they can.
Yeah.
But the sad commentary, and I'm looking at Kirk about this because he knows about this as much or more than anybody else. When I realize that as a foundation, all the money that foundations have, meaning the Trust, meaning MacArthur and all the rest, in many of these cases, if you were to take all of that money and just throw it at one problem, you still would have a problem resolving that problem.
Right.
And
so that's why it's so important to do the things we do.
Right. And actually, it leads, thank you, Mr. Lowry, that leads us into the next question, I think, which is a really important question around leadership. Because one of the things that Saquon and I firmly believe is that there are a number of assets within the African-American community. And you've talked about kind of the historical context in which the African-American community has changed over time in some sense. But with that said, what do you think are some of the things that philanthropy can do in terms of advancing leadership in Chicago, in the communities themselves, to kind of facilitate the things that you think are important, the things that you previously saw that were reinforcing and caused and created resiliency in families? Any thoughts that you might have around that?
Yeah, I've got thoughts. I guess the question is, how good are those thoughts?
Well, I'm sure if they're coming from you, they're going to be outstanding.
Well, I don't know. You're kind, Kirk. You're kind. No, I do think about this a lot, and I think you're right. I guess my first answer, and I don't want to sound like a smart aleck or anything, is that regardless to what the commitment should be and what philanthropy should do, we're still probably not doing enough. And then, of course, the other question is how much is available to do what we have to do, and then are you doing in the right things?
Right.
But to try to answer you the question that you posed, I'm concerned about leadership in general, but I'm especially concerned about Black leadership. And one thing as I look around, since I have been around as long as I have, and there are an awful lot of people that I've known that live in Chicago for quite a while that are recognized as leaders. And they're like me. They're getting old. They're getting decrepit. People that are probably listening to this thinking, I brought my walker here. but the truth is that most of us are. You're getting older. And I'm concerned about who's coming behind.
Right.
Yeah.
What I think has happened is that many of the changes that have occurred have really elevated individuals, but I'm concerned about whether it's elevating, let's say, a race, and our race. So what should philanthropy do? Well, we ought to do more things like what the fellowship programs, of which Saquon was a part of, and trying to recognize bright people and try to help them further their further development so that they can continue to even get sharper as leaders and do the kinds of things that need, but also foster these kinds of things so they can develop others coming underneath. So we need to do much more of that. One of the things that we're doing currently is I'm working with a young lady now who's awfully bright. I don't know, you may know Alicia Tate, who was formerly the editor and publisher, I guess, of the Chicago Republic.
She interviewed me.
Did she?
On behalf of the Trust.
Yeah, and a very bright lady.
Yeah.
And was, I guess she was a COO at the Community Renewal Society.
Okay,
yeah.
And we've talked about this subject and exactly what you've asked. And so what she's doing now with a little of our help is to really, we're going around and we're talking to other blacks, not necessarily leaders, but people, that educators, academicians, and the like, to find out what do they think are the missing dimensions here? What should be done to do that? And we're trying to put together a program that addresses these. My situation, my thought, is that I have some idea, this crazy idea, I think we need a black think tank. For instance, where we've got an awful lot of bright black men and women who need to have a forum to do the research, to do the writing, and do the things. And I'm not aware of anything like that it exists. But I think that, too, would help, one, to create the awareness that we need of the absence of maybe these leaderships or the importance of developing these leaders. Mm-hmm. And I think philanthropy ought to take a leading role in that.
Yeah, well, I thought, that was a robust answer. Thank you. Thank you
for
that.
Probably long, too.
Well, right? Well, I think, you know, robust answers sometimes have a little heft to them, which is a good thing. So let me ask you this, Mr. Lowry. The Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities. You obviously, the trust is a supporter. Well, I should say obviously, but thankfully, the trust is a supporter of us, and our work. And there's a number of things that are going on in the responsible fatherhood field nationally, which we're a part of, and we're certainly trying to advance that model nationally, and have had some breakthroughs in that regard. But what I wanted to ask you is, what's your vision? What's your sense of the vision and outcomes that you'd like to see with respect to the work? If you had to set a set of priorities, if you will, with respect to the work that Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities is doing, what would you say are those the top outcomes that you'd like to see?
It's a good question. It's probably a much better question than the answer you're going to get. But in talking about criteria, the first thing I'm going to say, if you do me a favor, Kirk, please, I'm Bill. Yes, Mr. Lowry. That's the first thing. In terms of going to what you're talking about, I guess, once again, we're talking about this long history of mine, and I had relatives that kids, my cousins and so forth, they didn't have fathers, and they never had fathers. I had my very best friend, who has been my best friend for 65 years or better, didn't have a father. And my dad, I guess, was his surrogate father. Mm. So what do I want to see? Well, I want to see, first of all, those black fathers who are willing and able and want to do some things, being able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We need jobs. We need things that they need and resources so that they can be the father to the family and to the children they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need a society that can support and does support that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd really like to see are the kids, more kids, have the joy of being raised in a family where you not only have the love, but the support and the security and the safety of being able to have a relationship with some people who love you so that you can grow in a healthy way rather than to have to be and combat the many, many distractions that most of these children have now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that leads to another question, which is, Bill, this notion about what it takes at the family level, right, to make these positive changes and supports for children, you know, and this leads me to the question about what do you think the balance is between the role of governmental institutions? What role, you know, let me just step back for a second. You know, black people have had a very long tradition of self-help in the community, and so that's embedded in the community context, despite what often might be the narrative that we get. But historically, we know that there's been a long history of self-help in the African-American community. But there's also a role for governmental institutions in the context of augmenting or facilitating things that need to happen. What's your sense about the role that government can play? What are some of the best things that government can do to strengthen the outcomes that we want to see for children and families?
Well, it's a little tough, but I guess in some cases, to me, it's also a little obvious. I think to start with, maybe the easy one is that somehow I know we're talking about a pie that only has so much to it and so many dollars, but there's one of allocation.
Right.
And I think that's one thing that probably separates us politically, because I think that the allocations of the funds that we have that are available should be redistributed. I think it should be changed. And I think there's some things that have to be done within our community as well as others, not only the black community, brown community, and others. That would emphasize to others the importance of us being developed to the best we can. We've got a potential and an asset there that has to be maximized. And I don't think the government, the agencies and so forth, are really on the same plane, let's say, that I am in terms of that importance. The other thing that is important to me is that the government has to play a better role in helping people to understand these are not black problems. These are not brown problems. These are not yellow problems. Mm. These are society's problems.
That's right.
Right.
And what affects us affects everyone else. Right. And I think that government has to do a much better job of making people realize that. and their actions have to support that knowledge.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it sounds, I mean, I think that's a great response, because obviously there is a systemic element to the challenges that we face, and that systemic element is not only something that's impacting the African-American community, it's impacting all families.
Exactly.
And some of the trends, in fact, that we're seeing in families, with respect to the rise in female-headed households, that's not only happening in the African-American community.
Yes.
In terms of the unemployment figures, that's not only happening in the African-American community. Although there's some disproportionate impact that the African-American families are experiencing, which do in some ways manifest in terms of race, of course. But I think with respect to those general trends, I think these systemic solutions need to be vested in the idea that we're going to be impacting everybody, because everybody's impacted by these changes.
Yeah, they are. And I guess the other thing, and you guys talk about this a lot, you know about it, maybe you feel exactly the same way. As Saquon was trying, you know, I've been in all my life all about jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Jobs are extreme. My dad told me that a job was perhaps one of the most important possessions that a man could have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not
mm-hmm.
only is it something that would enable you to take care of your family in the way that you probably mm-hmm. should, mm-hmm. but it's also something
right.
that gives you self-esteem and so many things that psychologically enables you to keep your head
mm-hmm.
high and
right.
do the things you're supposed to.
Right.
And so I think that we have to really emphasize the jobs and employment, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know too many people that don't want to work.
Right.
In fact,
right.
most of the people I know want to.
Right.
And the custodial, non-custodial fathers, the custodial fathers that I know, there are many
mm-hmm.
of them who want to work.
Right.
And one of the reasons that explains their absence is the fact that they don't have the
right.
jobs
right.
and their inability
right.
to really assume the role that
right.
they need. So employment, to me,
right.
is just so key
mm-hmm.
in this area.
Right. And, you know, it's really interesting that you say that about people wanting to work, because, you know, it's odd that our public policy is built on a presumption that people don't want to work.
Right.
And I find that particularly challenging, because I don't know, Saquon and I have been doing this work for a while now, and I can't remember a father coming up to me or him and saying, I don't want to work.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out who people are talking to when they're building these public policies, right, which is at the lowest common denominator, which is assuming that people don't want to work. And I think it does create some challenges, if you will, from a practice vantage point for us, where as people move towards self-sufficiency, you know, rather than augmenting that support, it's taken away because they don't need it now. They finally got a job,
mm-hmm.
you know. So,
right.
you know,
right.
I think there's some real issues that we have to contend with in terms of a public policy vantage point. But before I get into that, go off onto that tangent.
You mean before you go further?
yeah, because I've already gone off.
But let me say this, though, before you go on, because this idea of jobs is critical. But the question also is what kind,
that's right?
Right?
That's
and are the wages meaningful, right? And we've done the analysis, and the trust has, in terms of what livable wages are
that's
and
right.
what that affords
that's
you.
Right.
And if we're not talking about that, we're going to find ourselves, I believe, in a similar situation in this country right now. It's another show, right? You have the working poor.
That's
right?
Exactly right.
And so that's a show. And then also, at some point, we need to talk about, as I've argued for, is these kinds of businesses and entrepreneurship, particularly for those brothers coming out of prison, who I've argued
right.
nor the public or private sector will absorb them.
Right.
With respect to work. So that's another show, and we'll talk about that.
But you're right, it's another show, but it's, you know, it's like that ball of yarn.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start unraveling that, there are
mm-hmm.
so many things that you've got to touch.
You're
you
right.
know, it's easy for me to sit
right.
up here and talk about jobs, but you're right, you know, how much are they being paid? What
mm-hmm.
kind of jobs
right.
are
right.
they?
Right.
We can get also philosophical about joining the supply and the demand,
mm-hmm.
and that sounds highfalutin and everything,
right.
but it's something real there,
that's
too.
Right.
But that also takes us to education.
That's right. That's
and
right.
and with the sophistication
mm-hmm.
that we have now in terms of employment and what employers
mm-hmm.
feel that they need,
right.
it's no longer a case of brawn over brain, it's
mm-hmm.
brain over brawn.
Right.
Right.
And most of the young men and women around now don't stand a chance if educationally they're
mm-hmm.
not there, and the technology, they have to
right.
catch up to the
right.
technology so they can be employable.
Right.
To get paid the kind of money they need to do the things they
right.
have to do,
right.
and
right.
we have to take charge of that. We've got to champion that
right.
a little bit better.
And we and this is definitely another show. The question about how public education facilitates
oh boy.
that that is definitely another show, but I think there's something to be had there, mm-hmm. along with this larger question about industrial restructuring of our society, in which the jobs that formerly required brawn aren't as present in the urban space as they used to be and available to people mm-hmm. so that they can make a living wage. So that represents a significant challenge.
I had an uncle who graduated from the fourth grade. He worked in the steel mill. And he was fortunate enough to get in the steel mill, and he was a forklifter. He was a crane operator. And he worked in Arkell Gardens. He supported seven children mm-hmm. and a wife for 35 or 40 years in steel mill with a fourth grade education. Mm-hmm. That cannot happen now. Right. It just cannot happen now.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to close with one other question, if we might, Bill. And that's, with respect to strengthening the family, what do you believe, if you had an open community forum and you had the opportunity to talk to representatives throughout the Chicago communities about what communities need to do in order to strengthen families and to strengthen outcomes for children, what would be the kind of the seminal message you'd like to deliver to them?
You did wait until the end to have the toughest, didn't you? I'm going to say something, I guess, that's on my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm a big man on values. Mm. And I know that it's easy to say values, we got to have better values, we've got to do these. But I think we do. I think that if there's a message that we have to give, the message is that our value structure has to be such so that it does touch not just yourself. It's got to touch you first, mm-hmm. but it's got to touch your children. It's got to touch your wife. It's got to touch your community. Right. And I think that, and this is rather empty, I guess, and sort of puffy. But I don't think that most people are going to do those things that add value to lives and society if they don't have a value structure that supports that kind of notion. Mm. Mm. And I'm not sure, Kirk, how you make people do that or how you do it. In fact, this is another reason, I think, for the fathers to be with their families. Mm. Because if the father has that kind of value structure at all, or those values, and the time that he can spend with his children and so forth and living out those values, the kids are going to pick it up through osmosis, if nothing else. Right. And hopefully we would start something so that people would begin to think in terms of entirely different things, and the love they need and the support they need would be in the homes and not in the street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hear,
hear. Yeah, that's a really wonderful way, I think, to end this. Well, we want to thank Bill Lawrie for taking the time on Sunday to talk to us. I know how precious this time is. We've talked about this. We've talked about this a lot. And so I know what this means for Bill to come in on a Sunday and spend that time with us. So thank you.
Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Good luck. And I just want to say this as I sign off, because I think it's important that you know this. Mm-hmm. We all feel that what you guys are doing is a sensational job. Yeah. Keep it up. I'll try to hold up my end if you hold up yours.
Well, that's a deal. That's a deal we'll take, right?
We'll take it. Definitely.
Right. Well, thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay. So as we wind down, let's talk about some of the upcoming invited guests. Dr. Marlana Karinga, founder and chair of US Organization and creator of Kwanzaa, who will be with us next Sunday. Susan Taylor, founder of National Cares Mentoring Movement and editor-in-chief Emeritus, Essence Magazine, Phil Jackson, Executive Director of Black Star right here in Chicago, Joe Jones, Executive Director for Center for Urban Families in Baltimore, and Kenny Braswell, the Executive Director of the National Clearinghouse for Responsible Fatherhood. Both of these brothers out on the East Coast doing incredible work with fathers. Angela Kenyatta of ISIS Productions, who's doing a film on black fathers here in Chicago. Nora Stevens of the Illinois Department of Child Support Services will talk, and that's one show where we will have callers, folks calling in. Yvette Moyo of Real Men Cook Charities, and members of FFFC, like John, who we had here earlier. We always want to invite our fathers. And let us also say that FFFC is excited about working with WVON, particularly as they celebrate their 50th anniversary. The voice of the nation, and to be part of a national discussion on the issues and challenges of our time. And also, we want to invite you to listen to other shows like Cliff Kelly. Next week on Cliff's show, he's going to be talking about black men. Are they allowed to be human? And a bill passes. There's a bill that passed to protect homeowners from fraud. And the president, President Obama's initiative around Planned Parenthood. He's also going to be talking about high health costs for Americans and all the news from the weekend. Also, check out Perry Small next week. She's going to be talking about the political headlines for that week. And then lastly, we want to invite you to stay in touch with WVON on Facebook. Like our new page, search for WVON 1690 AM. Look for the 50th logo. Follow us on Twitter. The hashtag at WVON 1690. And check us on the web at www.wvon.com. This program is brought to you by FFFC. Call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Again, 312-252-0460, extension 120. Or visit us at our website at www.ffhc.org. That's www.ffhc.org. And listen to the show every Sunday at WVON at 2 p.m. Any closing remarks, Dr. Harris?
Well, you know I always got a closing remark, so, you know, I got to do that. Well, first of all, let me say I want to thank John for being here today, for one of our members who really conveys to us the power and significance of fathers in the lives of their children and the commitment that he models for what we want to see in fathers. And mm-hmm. and in fact, he's not alone. He sits mm-hmm. with a number of brothers that we convene mm-hmm. Regularly. And I want the listening public to know that, you know, despite what the image and some of the perception that's out there about what black men are doing for their children, they care, they want to be engaged, they want to be involved, and it's critically mm-hmm. important for their children.
Right.
And I got to say, again, thanks to Bill for his tremendous insights and his experience, sharing his experience with us today.
And his leadership.
And leadership, I tremendous. Tell
you. Also, let me give a shout-out. I promise my friend Dr. Ron Walker, who's the executive director of the Coalition of Schools Educating Boys of Color, COSBO. That's one long acronym.
Yeah, it is.
But they're incredible. I attended the dinner the other day at the Hyatt, and it was just incredible, the work that they're doing. And they give an award to five schools who have demonstrated real gains with respect to grades and aptitude for boys of color, and they're just tremendous. And so I just want to congratulate them on having a very successful conference last week.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And as we wind down, we want to thank the listening audience. Next Sunday, we'll be right back here at 2 p.m.
Yes, we will, and we can't wait.
So until then, take care.
Take care. Remember, give a kiss to your father.